In today's show, very contrary, Christian Vieri, striker, DJ, banker, grumpiest man in football. Also, Napoli and Inter say goodbye to the Champions League. Cesare Prandelli says hello to Genoa. And Turin Derby, should we care? That's all in today's show. Hello, Gabriele Marcotti.
Hello.
And hello, James Horncastle.
Hey.
And hello, you, listener. You're back, aren't you? Great. We've got an exciting episode, I think, for you today as we delve into the man, the mystery that is Christian Vieri. Before that, though, because this is a Wednesday morning just after two Italian sides have exited the Champions League, we should salute Inter. Inter, who are now outer, and Napoli, who have gone out at the hands of Roma, James Horncastle.
Yeah, that was pretty devastating to see. First Salah score and then Alisson with that stoppage time save. Again, I think if you're a Romanista right now, not a good place to be.
Yeah.
But they are in the round of 16 in the Champions League.
Yeah, they're through, but Salah and Alisson have done for Napoli.
I do want to point out, since there's only one spot yet to be decided in the round of 16 of the Champions League, and people love drawing deep conclusions about, you know, oh, this league is stronger than that league, they've got four teams through and whatever. Napoli and Inter go out with the exact same points and the exact same goal difference as Liverpool and Tottenham. And whichever way you slice it, results-wise anyway, that is yet another big leap forward in what was really, really tough, tough group.
Well, for Napoli, certainly, really tough group. PSG, Liverpool, Red Star, who proved to be a very difficult team, particularly away from home. Could they have done more? Is there anything Ancelotti could have done better? Do you think maybe that 0-0 draw in Belgrade or the last-minute equaliser in Paris?
Yeah, I don't know, of course. But you know, there's things that Liverpool and PSG could have done better too. You know,
yeah.
You can't. I don't think you can break it down like that. What I thought was really interesting, and I shall be writing about this in the form of cross promotion for ESPN, was Spalletti afterwards taking all the blame for the Inter PSV game. Generally, I don't buy this whole mentality psychology thing. I think it's kind of nonsense.
It's because you're mentally weak, Gab.
Exactly, I'm mentally weak. Yeah, I don't believe it's mentally strong, mentally weak. I think you're on the pitch, you execute, you try your hardest. I think 99.9% of footballers are like that.
Yeah.
If there's a game, though, where for whatever reason, whether it was the instructions from the manager, maybe he was the one who's mentally weak, they screwed it up mentally, it was the PSV game. Jorge Valero spoke about this afterwards. You know, they go out there. The whole build-up is, are Barcelona going to try against Tottenham? You know, what are we going to do? It's out of our hands. What if Barcelona send out, like, the janitor and the cook and Vermaelen? And they did send out Vermaelen, although, and a bunch of guys nobody had heard of.
The £250 million players, Coutinho and Ousmane Dembele.
Yeah, I know, but it's still Vermaelen.
Sure.
And this guy Miranda, I don't know if that's his son or who the hell that guy is. You know, and you had to go and beat PSV. And PSV are a team that you had a really difficult time against when you played them before. They're not a bad team. You should know it's a young team. They're top of the table. I think they're undefeated.
They lost to Feyenoord, but they've scored 53 goals. They're still 2 points ahead of the Ajax team that we all rave about.
For a lot of these guys, you're playing with house money. You need to be prepared for that. Instead, what happens, they go a goal down, and all of a sudden they freak out. They start playing with an absolute frenzy. I mean, so much of this is about getting the balance right between playing with intensity and urgency because you want to score, but equally executing, being calm, letting the fact that you're technically superior to the opposition, supposedly, make the difference. And there was none of that. And I feel bad because, and I love this stat, but Inter have the sixth highest attendance in Europe.
Yeah.
Inter fans deserve better.
That's the thing. What was it? 67,000 at San Siro. This huge game against the team that was bottom of the group. They had to get it right.
Well, they had two chances, remember, because they could have already been through a fortnight ago had they got a point at Wembley against Spurs, and they went very close to doing that. It's got to be very disappointing when, I mean, Ancelotti said this after the Napoli-Liverpool game, is that we had the most difficult fixture for our most important game, which is Liverpool away at Anfield, the last game. Inter, quote-unquote, had arguably their easiest opponent in the biggest game at home at San Siro. They should have taken care of business. Instead, they completely kind of, as Gab said, as soon as they went behind, they started playing in a frenzy and seemed to feed off all the kind of nervosismo that was going on around them.
And that's on the manager, though, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, you can go there and be like, look, I'm the Zen master with my shaved head and everything. But you know what? Like, it comes down to what you tell the players, right? We can say, I mean, part of me makes a point, well, you know, Inter aren't mature enough as a team the first time back in Europe, but just...
I'm going to raise a question here.
All these guys are veterans as well.
The headline on the Gazetta this morning was Inter Champions, which I think is shamey. They say Inter fools, essentially. No,
I think it comes from Champio, actually.
But
which means, like, sort of disgrace, mess.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you're right. That's better. Inter, although they were in a position to go through with a victory against PSV, a lot of that was based on lucky last-minute goals, on things falling their way. And it could easily have come to this game without them being anywhere near qualifying. You know,
yeah, I completely agree. And obviously the last-minute winner against
Spurs. I think
their
luck ran out to an extent.
The late equaliser against Barcelona
at home. Behind against PSV, Handanovic should be sent off. Mm. And Mark van Bommel, after the game yesterday, was saying if that had happened in the game at Eindhoven, we would probably be going through right now.
Yeah.
So this check was a little bit in the mail.
It was, but that doesn't mean that you don't expect them to raise their level on the night, because they've also had performances where they have raised their level, like against Roma, for example, where I thought they played really well. So there's a ton of work to do. I just hope that as a club, they don't go and squander all the political capital they've built up.
Right.
The fact that they've got the audience, the fans are there, they want it, you know?
This is a very emotional team, I would say. And
emotional club.
And I think what happened last night, it's going to be very interesting to see whether this sends them into a spiral. Mm. Because that has been a real trademark of their seasons for the last 6 years, really.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of already in one. When you look at the results, one win in seven now.
Yeah, and that was against Frosinone, but... As Gab, I think, said earlier, I mean, they have played, Barca,
yeah,
Spurs, Roma in that time.
Yeah, so don't be mean, James.
Yeah. And the performances have kind of been better than the results would suggest on the whole, I would say.
Okay. Well, Europa League for Inter and Napoli. We'll talk more about state of play in Italy a little bit later on. But this weekend, this Saturday, brings us one of the great fixtures, the Turin Derby. Torino taking on Juventus. An occasion for us to delve into the vaults and have a look back at a man who played for both those clubs and indeed pretty much everybody else in Europe, Christian Vieri. Ci vuole un fisico bestiale per resistere agli urti della vita. Ma quel che leggi sul giornale e certe volte anche alla sfiga. Always nice to hear a little bit of Luca Carboni there with Ci vuole un fisico bestiale, which Christian Vieri certainly had. He's a difficult man to define. We've had a lot of requests to do a retrospective.
He defined himself, James, as a bomber.
Is that what he said?
Which is someone who scores on and off the pitch.
Yeah, nice. He was a busy guy, as you say, in both his professional life and indeed his social life. A big grumpy lump, though. Scored some incredible goals. Once spent a whole season not celebrating them. Lived the high life. Also moved back in with his mum. Set incredible records for goal scoring, but also would have been happier, he says, just playing cricket. What do you think of, Gab, when you think of Bobo Vieri?
On the pitch, what I think of, and it's not a specific goal, so I think he scored one like this for Italy, but he scored a million goals like this, is one of those sort of through balls, and he sort of runs onto it, and, you know, he flattens one defender and outruns the other one. Because he had this incredible combination of power and really probably quicker than any guy his size that you can remember, certainly of that era. And one of the things he often gets ignored, because he's sort of this cartoonish figure, because he has this accent when he speaks, which is still slightly Australian-reflected, because obviously he grew up there playing for Marconi Stallions.
With Paul Ocon.
Mm.
A very gifted footballer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember Benny Carbone telling me, who played with him in the Torino youth team, that he was so bad. He was such a great athlete, but he was so bad technically at the time that the manager would simply just ask him to whip it in. They had a scheme where Bobo would run sort of in front of the defender, and Benny's job was just try to whip the ball in so it would bounce off of some part of Bobo Vieri, whether his head or his leg or whatever.
When did he learn to play football then?
Well, no, but this is great, because he obviously didn't learn it with his roommate with the under-21s, because that was Pippo Inzaghi.
Yeah, exactly.
Because these are two guys who famously can't play football.
He lives in Miami now. And my colleague from ESPN, Matteo Bonetti, worked with him. And essentially, you know, he has a convertible Bentley that he drives up and down South Beach at night. And during the day, he drives along South Beach he switches to a scooter and just kind of like circles around, you know, looking at the beautiful sights.
That's what he's doing now. Let's take it back then, all the way back to Bobo, fresh off the plane from Australia at the age of 14. His family, they'd moved out to Australia.
Because his dad was a professional footballer.
Mm-hmm. Roberto Vieri, mm-hmm. Who played for Marconi Stallions, and Bobo comes back. And he acquired his love for cricket in Australia. Alan Border was his big sporting hero. But at 14, they moved back to Prato, just to the west of Florence. And he starts to play football seriously and he gets noticed. And he begins this run of 9 years and nine different clubs. He breaks through at Torino.
Nightclubs or clubs?
I should think considerably more nightclubs. But okay, 91, 92, he gets his breakthrough at Torino. I think he debuts in the Coppa Italia at the age of 18.
Yeah, he's on the bench when they're reaching the UEFA Cup semi-final and final, which they lost to Ajax.
Indeed, all of this under Mondonico, we were talking about this, isn't the same team as Lentini. Has one season there, moves to Pisa. Has one season there, moves to Ravenna, then to Venezia. All one season, then he moves on. Next up, he moves to Serie A with Atalanta, where he teams up with Pippo Inzaghi for the first time and does well enough there that the European champions Juventus come in for him.
To replace Gianluca Vialli or Fabrizio Ravanelli.
Well, Boxic coming in at the same time, no?
Yeah.
Is he Zidane?
It was
what
funny.
A grumpy front two they were. I mean, Boxic and Vieri. No smiles there.
No.
Vialli might have said, wow, look who they replaced me with. Because it's not that he was bad. It's just that when you're that size and you're sort of bigger, stronger, faster than everybody else, but then you get on the ball and you mishit it, you look really, really bad. You look worse than like a normal sized person doing it. And I don't think that went out too well.
Oh. I mean, we played in Vieri with Civoli and Fisico Bestiale. When he went to Juventus in that time, he talks about Ventrone, the fitness coach, sort of half an hour just of abs, 90 minutes in the gym, and then your normal kind of two-session day. Kind
Plus
of
all your dietary supplements as well.
Well, yeah.
So guess how long he stays at Juventus?
For a year, James,
one season. That's
because
right.
Atletico Madrid offer to pay him five times more what he's getting paid at Juventus. So what does Christian Vieri do? He thinks, I could stay with the team that keeps getting to Champions League finals. I could go and make some more money.
With Jesus Gil.
Yeah. And maybe hang out in Marbella in the summer.
The interesting thing about Atletico Madrid is when he arrives, there's so much skepticism because, you know, especially back, I mean, still today, obviously, but yeah, Spain, they like to... technically gifted footballers. And they see this big guy who just doesn't really speak. He just kind of like grunts. He's like some sort of caveman. And they note that whereas most of the footballers, even the single ones, they live in those sort of like Madrid suburbs, those urbanizaciones, as they call them, with like, you know, the swimming pool and whatever. No, like he goes and he buys he rents an apartment, like a penthouse on top of like second tallest building in Madrid. And there's a lot of stories immediately, even before the season starts, about his partying and the company that he would keep and the intimate souvenirs that they would leave behind that may or may not have been kind of nailed to the wall. Now, it might be an urban legend, but he had a ton of fun. But what was amazing, though, people said, all right, this guy is like, you know, what is this like? But then he starts playing,
right,
and he just keeps scoring and scoring, and he cannot stop scoring. I think he scored...
Pichichi scores 24 goals
in 24
that season,
games.
Which is pretty unreal.
And when you make it all competitions, 32 appearances, 29 goals, and making it all competitions enables us to talk about the most iconic goal that he scored in Spain, that ridiculous one against Pauk. Basically, it's a lost ball. The ball is heading out towards the corner flag. The keeper goes after it and then gives it up because that one's gone. Vieri doesn't manage to get to it. Stops it on the touchline, essentially, and from there, swivels and kicks without even hesitating and does this impossible geometrically shot into the goal.
Ha recuperado bien Vieri, intenta el gol Christian Vieri, si entra golazo, impresionante! ¡Qué gol de Christian Vieri! ¡Qué gol acabamos de ver en el Estadio Vicente Calderón.
Just like when you see people score from corner kicks, but it's obviously at closer range.
And it's done without, you know, any kind of preparation
movement
at all. Run up, stop, bang.
And it's the last person in the world that you'd expect it from at that stage. And that's when people say, like, well, he does have some technical ability after all. He's not just, you know, bam, bam out there.
It is an extraordinary goal. It's well worth looking at. It's Atletico Madrid against PAOK from the 97-98 season. When that season ends, he's off again. This
he's
time,
offered more money.
Well, this time he goes to Craniotti's Lazio, where he partners up with Marcelo Salas.
And cardboard Boxage again.
And Boxage, right. Yeah. And they have some success.
You just call it cardboard Boxage.
They win the last ever Cup Winners' Cup.
Uh-huh. And he scores a great goal in the final at Villa Park, which again is, I think, symbolic of Vieri. He kind of made long-range goals look like tap-ins. I mean, he scores a header, a towering header from outside the box in this game into the top corner. Nedved in the end wins it. But yeah, and then he's off again, James.
He moves on because now Marcello Lippi says, I need him at Inter. That's the key piece that's going to make Inter winners. And they make Bobo Vieri the most expensive player in the world. At the time, a record transfer fee of €32 million.
He scored a hat-trick on his debut.
And Diego Simeone, no? Yeah. Going the other way. Mm. Which would also
work out really well.
Yeah, which, you know, it's another one of those great Inter moves.
It would come back to haunt them on May 5th, 2002, of course.
Yeah,
sorry,
also,
Gab. Sorry.
No, no. Also, you lose your emotional heartbeat and leader, El Cholo, and you know that because, you know, deep down, he's a wild animal filled with righteous rage, but also, you know, also calculating brain. He would go and become a legend somewhere else, or build upon his legend somewhere else.
So it proved. Vieri,
and
meanwhile,
he had a big lump who was just injured all the time. And
well, he stays 6 seasons at Inter. So that's almost his defining club.
Yeah, he was, I think he's the 8th all-time top scorer in their history.
103 goals for them in 143 appearances.
He was partner up with somebody who was pretty good. Also
phenomenal.
Fast and powerful. Ronaldo.
Well, yeah, but they barely played together.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. Like, they ended up playing like 3 times together.
They played hard off the pitch, though. They really did.
No, so that you had Ronaldo sometimes. You had Roberto Baggio for a while in there. You had Crespo, Adriano.
Well, in 2002, James, when they went so close to winning the league title, I think the strike partnership that played the most games for them was Ventola and Calon.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. He does score 103 goals and 143 appearances in the Inter-Parma one, which is just special. Is it Moriero, I think, who puts the ball in?
So he gets the ball with his back to goal. And
he's marked by Lilian Thuram, by the way.
And he does this move which kind of leaves Thuram for dead, doesn't he? He kind of shifts it back inside, and just in that move, he maybe gains a yard on Thuram. And then within the blink of an eye, he's hit it. It's gone top corner. Buffon sees it but can't get anywhere near it. It's a really kind of one of those classic Bobo goals, I would say.
A goal! A che goal, signori! A che goal, Tritolo! A che goal, Tritolo!
Che goal, signori, indeed. So there he's doing amazing things, and he's fast becoming the star, the fundamental part of the Italian national side. My impression, though, that he's still not entirely happy about this. I mean, for example, the 2001-2002 season where he will not celebrate goals. He scores at San Siro and will just turn away from the fans and walk slowly back to the centre circle. What was going on?
What, in that particular...
That year, he said that the fans had treated him unfairly because they were kind of calling him out for not being as good as he used to be.
Well, and also, like, he had a real kind of up and down, I'd say mostly down relationship in the end with Inter's owner, Massimo Moratti, because he felt that Moratti would basically go and talk to journalists all the time, complain to journalists about certain performances, his fitness. Moratti always had his kind of darlings. Vieri was briefly one of them, but it was mainly El Chino Recoba. It was then Adriano. I think there was always this kind of sense that he doubted whether he was fit or not. I think there was a time when Vieri was in the stands this woman was sat behind him and basically taps him on the shoulder and says, "You're not a great professional, you know, get your act together." He starts insulting her. He then finds out that's Massimo Moratti's wife. And just a general kind of all those kind of things.
Because the team weren't winning, just as, you know, they hadn't done for a long time, you have this situation where he becomes the lightning rod of everything.
Right.
And different players would have handled it differently. And I think certain players always get scapegoated. Some of them know how to handle it with the media. Here you have a guy who had horrendous relationship with the media, mainly right. because, like I said, he didn't really speak Italian. He's just monosyllabic grunts. And who took it personally, like the incident you said with Massimo Moratti's wife and stuff. He's not helping himself, so all of a sudden he becomes the problem.
Right.
When in fact, he should have been the solution for Inter.
Right, and for the national team as well. And this brings us on to really what happened in 2004. Vieri has an extraordinary record. He played in 9 World Cup games for Italy across 2 World Cups. He scored 9 goals, a goal a game at the World Cup. It's just amazing. But yet, what we remember, I think, more than anything, is the disappointments, the miss against South Korea that ultimately set them up for the exit in 2002, and the hideous...
Yeah, that's what did it, wasn't it? It was the miss against South Korea, nothing to do with Byron Moreno. Okay. I'm kidding, yeah. It was an ingredient. He could have been stronger than Byron Moreno.
Yeah, well, right. He was in front of a wide-open goal at that point. Yeah, and yeah. It can happen.
Not
it can
his
happen,
finest
but
work.
I mean, you said 1998, yeah. when it was kind of very much Bobo is the guy up front, yeah. and then it's one of Badshaw and Del Piero, and he scored, what, five goals in 4 games? In that tournament, and was still very young in France, but quite a curious relationship is with the national team, because he would later say, you know, that his big regret was obviously not being a part of the squad in 2006,
right?
Well, so okay. In 2000,
right?
Had he been around, we might have had an entirely different outcome.
So he
too.
Misses out on the runners-up medal in 2000. The European
through
Championships through injury. 2004, he is there, but so is Trapattoni, and Italy come up with a hideous campaign in the European Championships in Portugal. After the draw with Sweden, there were reports in the press that Vieri and Buffon had fallen out over Buffon's mistake, and Buffon supposedly had said, why didn't you score at the other end? And when those reports surfaced, Bobo Vieri, as you say, who had his own unique way of handling criticism, came out and gave the most extraordinary press conference I've ever seen from a footballer. You can criticise me as a player, if I play well or not, if I score or not, but I don't care anything about you. I'm more of a man than all of you put together. I can walk down the street with my head high. In the morning, I could look at myself in the mirror. You can't.
And when they went out, wasn't there one of the player ratings in Gazzetta which said, you may be more of a man than all of us, but here's a nice 4.5 out of 10 for your performance in that game. Campionato di
calcio italiano. You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show.
So a guy with a certain amount of anger, and it turns out, going back to his Inter days, that there was good reason for him to feel suspicious about Moratti, because it subsequently emerges that the club had employed a private detective to follow him and were tapping his phone.
Yeah, so an investigation was launched into that. Allegations that it wasn't just Vieri, that they were also following Adrian Mutu, and even Vladimir Jukovic at some point.
How normal is this, Gab, that a club would pay to have surveillance of their players?
So I think within reason, there's been rumours, and I think this happens in the Premier League too. They don't necessarily have surveillance, but they want to know what the players are doing, if they're partying and so on.
Phil Neville with his national side as well.
Oh, yeah. I think at Inter, they took it to another level with wiretaps and in surveillance. And I think specifically in Vieri's case, because Vieri had this enormous contract, they were looking for reasons to either get him to renegotiate or maybe invalidate his contract, because I believe he was one of the top 3 paid players in the world at the time.
The only thing that came out from what they found is that, you know, sometimes sped a little too fast and was, you know, went through red lights, and that was it. That was all.
Okay.
That's all they found.
He sues them anyway. When it emerges, he successfully sues them. He cited them for £14 million worth of damages for moral and existential damage to his public image.
I think it led to depression and insomnia.
Right.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing with Vieri, because he appears to be very, as you mentioned before, kind of almost like a one-dimensional footballing kind of a goal machine. But it does seem there's an underlying unhappiness behind a lot of things that occurred, his constant moves from one club to another.
I think it was also because, and again, I don't know the guy well at all, but I know people who know him very well. He's actually an intelligent guy, but he's not an educated guy. And so the theory that's been put to me is he never had the tools to kind of express or channel his thoughts and his feelings and the way he felt. And it kind of all came out at once, and it came out in weird ways, and, you know, with outbursts or whatever. But he was sensitive to what happened, but then he couldn't show it. He probably had the whole Aussie macho man nonsense. And it created a sort of very complicated psychological picture to the guy, which, of course, Inter being Inter, they never understood. And basically every mistake they could have made in handling what, you know, the guy who's probably, dare I say, over time, if you count longevity, the best center forward that they've had. I want to say since Spilo Altobelli, because I was a fan, but no, he was probably even more effective than Spilo Altobelli.
I mean, Italy's best centre forward since when?
Gigi Riva, yeah. I mean, but they managed to screw it all up.
You mentioned his intelligence and looking at the deals that he's done. I mean, it's not a coincidence, probably, the fact that he's got this incredible portfolio of activity. He was involved in setting up a bank. I mean, admittedly, it's not there anymore, but Banco Farnese, which he and Pippo Inzaghi helped set up. You're making your Marconi face.
That's I want to look after my fortune.
Right.
Pippo Inzaghi would probably be really good at it.
Well,
I imagine him to be such a miser.
He got out early, Pippo. Oh, right. Yeah. He's got Sweet Years with Paolo Maldini. Mm-hmm. He's got another clothing brand with Christian Brock, you know?
Yeah, who's one of his
Bracci.
Hugs and kisses.
If you come out of the Moscova metro line in Milan, you'll see their kind of restaurant and hangout where they're always basically there.
Oh, yeah? They're not in Miami Beach.
When they're not in Miami, yeah.
Right. And he's got his DJ line now. But the other thing he did was, I mean, he made a spectacularly profitable exit from Inter. At the time, the story was that the club had basically bought him out of his contract in order to facilitate a move to Tottenham, and thus were massively shocked when 2 days later he signed on a free for their crosstown rivals Milan.
And he did it out of spite. I mean, he was also like, I think he called up Paolo Maldini and said, do you guys need a striker? And Paolo was like, well, we've got Inzaghi, Gilardino. I think they had Ronaldo at the time, did they? He ends up going there, and he admits that he tried so hard because he really wanted to kind of prove Inter wrong.
Right.
Really sort of.
Well, he unfortunately didn't work out. He had one goal, I think.
And that was the season leading into the World Cup? He ends up going to Monaco.
Mm. He's desperate for a place, as you say, in the Italian side for the World Cup, having had a rough time of it so far, but does his knee playing for Monaco under Francesco Guidolin against PSG and doesn't go to Germany. So he misses the 2006 World Cup. He returns to Italy, and we have this basically a return to his nomadic ways in this curious postscript to the glory years. So after Monaco, in July 2006, he signs for Sampdoria. Then before the season can even start, leaves Sampdoria and joins Atalanta instead on, and remember, this is a guy who's basically been coining it in.
Minimum wage now.
Minimum wage of €1,500 a month, but with a bonus of 100 grand for every goal he scores.
And he only scored two.
Yeah, but
one of them.
Okay, so to set this up, so here's a guy who basically by now has become a washed up former glory, in most people's mind. He hasn't scored a goal, I think, for 18 months as he takes the field for Atalanta against Empoli. And then what happens?
Well, he receives the ball just inside Empoli's half. Or is it Siena? Siena, no?
Oh, you're right. Sorry, it's Siena, yeah.
Because he tried this against Empoli early in the season, and in trying it, he basically injured himself. I mean, it was out for ages. But he has another go this time, and he receives the ball back to goal, and the ball is fired into him. It's not just straight to feet. And he manages to turn all in one movement, and then notice, I think, Manninga is off his line, and then just hits it from about, 40, 45 yards?
Yeah.
And it loops over Manninga and bounces in. Fantastic.
Goal dell'anno. And then it's back home to Tuscany. He joins Fiorentina, where, in another surprise, he moves back in with his mother, who lives in Prato, and he gets to train in with the commuters every morning to go to the allenamenti.
Yeah, and pretends he's just a lookalike.
Is that right?
On the platform with a lot. I mean, he can't obviously pass it off all the time.
Because it becomes a big story. I mean,
this is when he started wearing those glasses, right? To make himself look like he was like some kind of accountant. Right? It's one of those things, like, you know how like in the Superman movies,
uh-huh.
right? Like,
Clark Kent.
And yeah, then he takes the glasses off, and you can tell it's Superman. Then he puts the glasses back on, you know, and then like, oh, look, wait, who's that? Like, where did Superman go? You know, like,
interesting, Lois,
is it just me?
He says, I wanted to go and live with my mother and just live the simple life, get the train in the morning.
His mom's French now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that I was not expecting that from Christian Vieri. And I mean, I hope now with his bobo dance and his DJing that he's found what he was looking
for.
He's
become a dad. He's just in the last week. Yeah, it seems that he might be settling down. Maybe this was another reason why Moratti was commissioning these private detectives, because he had a string of relationships with very famous showgirls, if you like. And, yeah, would have some quite explosive tiffs with them. I think Elisabetta Canalis, didn't she? He left his phone on whilst he went to sleep, and she got his phone and went through the messages, didn't find anything that she particularly liked, and so wrote some kind of insult in spray paint on his Porsche Cayenne, which then Bobo just looked at and just, I think it was parked at a hotel at the time, and just gave the keys to the valet driver, just said, you can have the car. So there you go.
I just feel Vieri, I mean, he had an incredible career. Financially, he made a packet. He's done brilliant deals. He's played all over the world, been a top scorer in Spain, top scorer in Italy. And yet, I mean, when I think of his career, I think of a career that didn't live up to what I was expecting, probably what he was hoping either. Is that fair?
I would amend that, because I go back to what he was like when he came through and the way Italian football viewed him as simply a battering ram. So his career began with very, you know, low expectations that, you know, you might be a competent, say, to be Mr. Bump type footballer. Then the expectations got very, very high afterwards. So he really had that, I think, that up and down. And for whatever else that we remember him for, whether it's the women or the way he spoke or whatever else, we need to bear in mind that there was that period when he improved, you know, as a professional, as an adult, probably as much as any footballer that I can think of. And again, I can only assume, even though I don't think he's talked about it, that there is an element of hard work and 10,000 hours. I don't think somebody flicking on a switch.
He hates it whenever it's put to him that he was not a professional. He always bangs on about, I was first to arrive at training and last to leave and all this sort of thing. And who cares if I party hard, because I always put in the work, the time, in training and in games. You can't reproach me for any of that. But, you know, as you said, I think there was always this kind of feeling that those injuries were because he was playing hard, but also he was kind of partying hard as well.
Right. Work hard, play hard.
Well, you can combine the two. Of course, that's what he does now with his new career as Bobo DJ and Bobo Dance. Wish we could hear more of that. Just as a final coda on all of this, some people say there are no real friendships in football, but there's one that I can think of, and it is Bobo Vieri and Pippo Inzaghi.
Yeah, well, I mean, roommates, as I said, but also figure fairly highly in what a song was it?
Gab's
was it
the a big fan of this.
Foot volley? Footbally summer tournament, which is very much his thing. That's how he keeps in shape.
Yeah, this is somebody who lives in Miami Beach, where it's summer all the time, and then in when it's summer in Europe, he comes over and he lives on the beach in Italy, and he organizes these events on the beach and stuff. And he came up with a song, which I remember one summer, it felt like it was like playing continuously. And basically what it says is if only I had Pippo Inzaghi's money and his life, which is all about sex, yoga, and rock and roll. I don't know about the rock and roll part, but I'm sure Pippo Inzaghi does a lot of sort of highly sexualized or highly sort of like tantric yoga type.
In between having his Brisaola and Plasmon.
Yeah. Keep that in your mind, listener, as we take a short break for someone to say Golazzo. And then we return with what Pippo Inzaghi's life is currently filled with and the rest of the current Serie A situation. This weekend, it's Torino-Juve, one of the most passionate, etc. and so on fixtures Crosstown Rivalries than that. I've got to admit, my heart's not in it. I was saying this to you yesterday, James, that just not feeling it.
Why? Mazzarri, because he sucks the life and fun out of everything he touches.
Got to say, poor old Mazzarri had a nasty scare, and he's back from a heart.
He did. And then he was back, what, a week later?
Yeah.
And then he's getting all angry on the touchline, getting sent off for the third time. I mean,
it's not right.
The stress levels of this man.
So that's part of the problem. Walter Mazzarri is a hard manager to love. But also Urbano Cairo, the Torino owner, is a hard owner to love. And it's just a team that, I don't know, can they do anything against Juve?
It would be great if they were the ones to inflict the first league defeat on Juventus this season.
It'd be great if anyone were. Yeah. I mean, it'll be against Juve, but just, you know, for Serie A. But
yeah.
Actually, they're undefeated away from home, but unfortunately, this match is not at Lo Stadium, as Andrea Agnelli insists on calling it.
And they are sixth, which is kind of on course with where they want to be, because Torino have spent actually quite a lot of money the last couple of years, and they really want to get back into the Europa League, which is where Gianpiero Ventura took them. But they're very solid. I can see your point, James, in that they're not the nicest team to watch, because the guys up front are not scoring any goals. Belotti has not really been the same for the last year. They're trying to figure out a way of playing him, Simone Zaza, and Iago Falque.
Mm.
Iago's probably the best player in this team. But aside from that, it is very Mazzarri.
Chelsea fans, if you watch the game, look out for on-loan fullback Ola Aina.
Yeah.
He's actually been pretty good.
That's the Turin derby, and it's coming up on Saturday. Juve fresh from another derby, of course. The Derby of Italy.
Mm.
And they beat Inter 1-0. We spoke about that already a little bit on Totally Football Show. Anything you want to add about that game? Inter looked impressive, lost.
Yeah, Inter looked impressive for a while, and then Clever Clog takes off Politano for Borja Valero because we need more possession in midfield. But, you know, even then, Inter played well, but, you know, they hit the post with Gagliardini, and then they had that other chance. Was it Perisic who just kind of stupidly scuffs it, Perisic style? And you just know that sooner or later, you know, Juventus are going to move into third gear and score.
And Mandzukic scores, and they're off to the best ever start by an Italian side ever.
Jan.
Well, and also matching the best ever start by any team in Europe's top five leagues as well.
PSG?
Yeah, match that as well. But, I mean, you had Cancelo in this game, who sort of, for most people, comes out of it man of the match. But again, it's very much kind of like, I'm just going to go forward all the time. I'm not going to really care much about Politano. And Politano was probably creating into his best chances. It was when he went off that they just lost all the kind of momentum that they had. And Cancelo's the one who basically, you know, ends up putting the ball in the box for Mandzukic. And that's that. Mandzukic having his best ever season for Juve. And again, just, it's becoming very much a trademark. Just mismatch at the far post with a fullback, Kwadwo Asamoah. Who left Juventus in the summer, was replaced by the guy that Inter, because of FFP, couldn't sign Cancelo, and boom, ironic.
Indeed so. All right, well, anyway, the Classifica currently has Inter a whopping 14 points behind Juve after that defeat. Juve are 8 points clear of second place Napoli. Then you have Inter, who are 3 points clear of Milan, who are in the last Champions League position. Then you've got Lazio a point behind them, and Torino in sixth ahead of a whole bunch of sides like Atalanta, Roma, Sassuolo.
Yeah. Torino could quite easily be 12th if they drop points at the weekend or they lose, because that's how tight it is between, what, 6th and 12th.
A couple of things to mention. First of all, Pippo Inzaghi. How long is he going to last?
Well, I mean, what's their next game? Milan. So, I mean, his future could be decided against a team that obviously he's a legend for.
And fired him.
But look at Pippo's hair. He's graying.
Yeah.
He's graying so quickly.
It's a sad sight.
I feel sorry for Pippo.
Oh, well, we'll see what happens to him against they're in the bottom three now, aren't they?
Yeah, they have been for some time.
Okay, not far off the bottom three are Genoa, who have taken steps to remediate that situation by firing their manager, because it worked so well last time.
Started well for Prandelli, didn't it? Down to 10 men after 6 minutes. His captain, Domenico Crescito, harshly sent off against Spal. They go behind, but they managed to get back into the game. Play quite well, and there are some good players there, as Ballardini showed.
Piontek, who scored again, and Kouame as well. So they started off the season with Davide Ballardini. They ditched him for Ivan Juric. How long was Juric there for? 7 games or something?
Yeah.
And now they bring in Cesare Prandelli, who you guys were saying recently when we discussed him, has an unfortunate habit of choosing the wrong club to make his comeback at. This doesn't seem to be breaking that trend.
Well, also because I think the other offer he'd had recently was to take over from Paul Clement at Reading.
Oh.
But
Prandelli?
He'd been, Yeah, but he'd been out of the game in Italy at least for 8 years, if you count the fact that he was coaching Italy for four. He just wanted to get back into the game somehow. He'd been very close to taking over Lazio before Lazio got their heads turned by Bielsa, and then was in contention for the Udinese job before Davide Nicola got it, and just thought, I need to take a job.
Right. Well, there's the potential for something, I guess, at Genoa. It does mean...
potential to be sacked.
It does mean that for the first time in 10 years, Gab, all 20 Serie A managers are Italian. So that's nice. My feeling is he maybe could have waited a week or two more and tried to get the Roma job again, where he was briefly a while back, because it does look like things are heading in one direction for De Francesco down in the capital. Their clash with Cagliari last weekend was an interesting one, Gab.
Yeah, I mean, there were three absolutely insane finishes in Serie A this weekend.
Two involving Roman sides
exactly.
on Saturday.
So this one, they're playing a Cagliari team without their best players.
Barella,
without Barella. Castro, somebody else too was out.
Pavoletti got injured in the warm-up.
Yeah, Pavoletti's not great, but you know, he's a body up front, right? Yeah. They're winning 2-0 and everything's sorted. Cagliari pull one back, no matter, because then they have a guy sent off. No, they had somebody sent
two
off.
Guys sent off.
Two guys sent off and the manager, but by this point it's already the 90th minute.
And Tommaso Giulini, the president of Cagliari, is down on the sidelines getting ready to take on the referee, which he does.
Giulini, by the way, is an absolute power tool. Like, I thought because he was slightly younger and because he's not from there, I thought, like, you know, he'll bring some semblance. No, uh-huh. it's like he's trying to, like, turn into some, like, mini Cellino. But anyway, you're playing 11 against 9, right? So presuming the two goalkeepers are in goal, that means that it's 10 versus 8. That means that there's always going to be two people open. You can send them to the far edges of the pitch and pass them the ball because they can't all be covered at the same time, right? It's pretty freaking obvious. You're away from home. You've conceded a goal. This is all you have to do. But no. There's this weird ball over the top. Marco Sau runs onto it.
I love Marco Sau.
Yeah, the defense will get kind of confused. And he goes and he beats Olsen, who, by the way, come on, a goalkeeper named Robin. Come on now. Anyway.
This is the 96th minute.
In the 96th minute, and you drop two points.
You're going to love what Lazio did with Sampdoria in the capital. This was spectacular. So Samp actually took the lead. Quagliarella, who's enjoying another fantastic season, puts them ahead.
The Euros with Italy.
Should do.
If they get there, which they will.
We'll see. But then Lazio equalised. Now, it's after the 90th minute when Lazio take the lead, isn't it, with that
Lazio
penalty?
Lazio equalised in the 95th minute.
95th minute. So bingo. All right, it was late, but they did it. Immobile scores a penalty. Samp have had a player sent off as well, so they're now a man down. And it's the 95th minute. Job done. It was late, but we did it, guys. And then...
What a goal. I mean,
unbelievable. So this is the 99th minute now.
Yeah.
Are you going to get upset about this one as well, Gab?
No, this one, to some degree, I can give a pass because this one's so improbable. There's like a long ball into the box and Saponara, he's turned the wrong way. His body shape is all weird. He himself says that, I jumped and I closed my eyes, which, you know, sometimes people close their eyes on headers, but, you know, at least you see the ball coming in. You kind of feel like he just closes his eyes and says, like, you know, he's a religious man. He says, God, it's in your hands. Somehow the ball strikes, is it the outside
it's
of
the
his
outside,
boot, right?
Yeah. This flying volley, I mean, total kung fu move.
And it's a total weird loop. It's the kind of thing Zlatan would do, and you'd be like, all right, you know, that's Zlatan. But, and it beats the keeper, and it's 2-2. And then it gets even better, and I tweeted these out. You can find these pictures because they're extraordinary. Naturally, he starts running off towards to go and celebrate with the fans, or Zakura, because, you know, I'll get booked, who cares, right? So he takes off his shirt, but then he takes off his undershirt because, like all good Italians, he's wearing his Maglia della Salute, which I know you really love because it's winter.
In summer as well.
Yeah.
And always.
Yeah. So he's jumping up into the stands, hugging somebody, and then he starts to take off his trousers as well.
Yeah.
Full Di Canio.
Yeah. To be fair, Di Canio had the appropriate situation for it. This, I'm not so sure. But then you see one of his teammates, and somebody tried to identify.
It's Tonelli.
Is it?
It's Tonelli, yeah.
With the arm tattoos?
Yeah.
Who's got his hand basically inside his rectum, holding him up. It's the weirdest.
Tonelli pulls his pants down, and then basically realizes that, my friend's pants are down, and everyone's watching. I better try and cover this up. So he puts his hand.
But anyway, somebody's very, very comfortable with nakedness and naked right. bodies and his friends.
I think most footballers are.
Yeah, some yeah. more than others, but, you know.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was nice. And you mentioned three spectacular finishes. Are we going to talk about Sassuolo Fiorentina?
Oh. Yeah, yeah. I mean, James. that was just loopy. I mean, again, these two teams haven't won since September. Kind of play good football, but it's not going for them. Sassuolo go 2-0 up. Looks like it's home and dry. Fiorentina managed to get one back for Cholito Simeone, who hadn't scored in like 14 hours. Had to come off the bench because he'd been dropped for this game. But then Sassuolo looked like, again, they get back in 2-goal lead, 3-1. And just craziness happens in what stoppage time again. Is it 96 minutes this time? Miralas?
Former Everton star Kevin.
Exactly.
Making it 3-3 is absolutely, absolutely unreal finish. This is where you say, where else but in, right?
Indeed, indeed. And on top of all of that, to put the cherry on top of the delightful cake that was the weekend in Italy.
0-0 between Milan and Torino.
Oh, no.
How fantastic was that? Yeah.
No. Donnarumma saves, though.
I mean, yeah, the 1-1 draw between Parma and Chievo. Chievo now up to 3 points, and it could have been more if it wasn't for the most spectacular free kick of the weekend.
Ah, Bruno Alves. That was incredible, wasn't
now,
it?
This came
been learning that from Cristiano Ronaldo.
Had he? Is that something?
Yeah,
that
he scored 8 in his career.
Has he?
Because his best friend is Cristiano Ronaldo, and yeah, they regularly call each other up. They trade notes on nutrition. No, on nutrition as well.
Okay.
Apparently,
maybe Alves can teach Ronaldo how to do free kicks.
Yeah, well, there you go. But yeah, Alves has apparently learned this sort of anti-inflammatory drink that is made with what is it, turmeric.
Oh, yeah,
that,
nice.
Cristiano Ronaldo really likes.
If I can say that about Bruno Alves, mm-hmm. so he's obviously played all over the world. He's played in
Scotland.
All these weird countries like Scotland.
What did you play for in Scotland?
Rangers,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Played for Zenit and stuff. Because he's, what, 36 now?
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that at 36, he can still play and contribute.
He's been excellent for them.
He's obviously, you say, only in Italy.
No, exactly. No, but I mean, I think there's something to be said for this guy who clearly... You know, he may not be as maniacal as Cristiano in terms of looking after him and taking care of his body, but he is very much a professional. And that gets lost because sometimes he's those psychopathic fouls and he's, you know, he's a bit slow and whatever. And, you know, he looks like the more handsome, worse version of Pepe, you know, sometimes when he plays. But, you know, he's doing it.
Yeah. I think he scored, what, 2 in the last 3 games? He made
really?
A goal line clearance as well. Because Parma, up until this point, were up in the European places, yeah. up until the Milan game. The three guys that they got real last minute, Gervinho, Inglese, uh-huh. and Bruno Alves, have given them a real sort of chance of not only staying up, but maybe doing something a little bit more than that.
Wow. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Yeah. All right. Well, much to look forward to then this weekend. And we'll be back next midweek with further reflections on the extraordinary cultural and sporting entity that is Italian football. Hopefully, listener, you'll be joining us then. Many thanks, Gabriele, for this extended edition of Golazzo.
It's my pleasure.
And you, James Horncastle.
Yeah, always.
And you, listener. For now, from all of us here, it's arrivederci. Campionato di
calcio italiano. You've been listening to Golazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.